Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, and as promised, I have on the line with us, you prefer to be referred to as Carol Sip?
Yeah, Caroline. That's Caroline. Fine, Caroline. Yep.
Caroline Sip from Hunebierg in Alsace. How are you today?
Good, I'm fine, thank you.
Good. So we were talking in the first parts of the program to women who are a sommelier here in the States, and I thought that your story was very interesting as a woman in wine. Your family has been growing wine in Alsace for how long?
I'll be the 10th generation, so a few years.
And how many of the winemakers have been women along the years?
I'll be the first one.
So, slight change. So,
yeah, a bit. It's a new challenge, but it's well accepted.
So that's something that that culturally it's, you, in your generation, it's not an issue.
Well, it's a lot different than 40 years ago. Today, we have more and more women in the industry, so it's well taken. People see it better than 40 years ago. But I guess it's all about respect in the... like, at the beginning of your career, you have to be prepared to gain that respect.
Whether you're male or female?
Yeah, of course. And you have to be a strong character. Every time you meet someone, I guess when you're a woman, you're more questions. You have more, like, it's... they test your knowledge, your capacities, and then when you've earned their respect, everything is much easier. But it really doesn't matter if you're a woman or a man, as long as you can do the job. So you're more thinking about with your brain than your muscles, I guess. But,
yeah, that's it's pretty hard to think of. If you're trying to muscle your way through winemaking, you're in big trouble, right?
Yeah, it's but it's physical job, but some parts it's more like with your guts than your physical part.
Understood. But, so take our listeners through your path a little bit of being a young girl and having an interest in this, and how did you come to have an interest in it? And how have you learned, and where are you now?
Well, I've always lived on the winery, so I was all the time around the people making wine. Harvest was really a big part of the passion, because we, as a kid, we were always harvesting and seeing the fun into harvest. And then I did a scientific baccalaureate, so it's very general. And when you're 18, you have to choose what you want to do. So I chose to study wine growing and oenology in Burgundy. And after that, I did a year of wine marketing. So, and after that wine marketing year, I really was a hands-on person, so I decided to travel a bit to experience and different wine cultures and techniques all around the world. So
where did those travels land you?
I was in Oregon in the vineyards, then in California, Australia in a cellar, and in Denmark also to see more into the restaurant business.
So three very, very cold places, I'm sorry, very warm places compared to Alsace to grow wine. Australia, California, and Oregon are much sunnier places in general, maybe not Oregon.
Yeah,
but,
Oregon is pretty close. That's they specialize in Pinot Noir, so that's why I went there. But Australia was really to see a very big factory. I wanted to see high-scale winemaking and different techniques of major production. So it's more organization and just curiosity, also. And California was also very much because I was curious to see how they were doing the winemaking, but also the culture, seeing how people drink it, who was drinking the wine. And in California, I was working in a restaurant. So I was a manager in the Fleming's restaurants. And that was just like culture opening.
And so what did your education make you feel differently about making wine in Alsace than when you were growing up?
Well, I guess you have a mind opening. So you see different ways of organization, different... it's always good to see someplace else than your own house. So it's...
sometimes helps you see your own house more clearly.
Yeah. You come home with different ways and a lot more energy to put into your own winery. You have just more energy to, and you want to do the best in your place. You saw things that you don't want to do, and things you want to apply to your wines, and you tried lots of wines. So, it's traveling is always good.
Is there something that you came home in your mind that you wanted to do? And you're working with your father,
yes.
Jacques Sip. Is there something that you had in your mind that you really wanted to do and you brought it to your dad and he immediately shot it down?
Shut it down? No. He's pretty open-minded. He kind of gives me the openings to try whatever I want to do. So that's pretty nice. He just tells me I can try it and see how it goes. But
what do you think is the smartest thing you've tried, and what do you think is the biggest failure that you've tried so far?
Good question. I was more working into Pinot Noir, and that was probably one of the best thing that happened. I was more precise on the Pinot Noir. We were not very famous on this grape variety, and being more precise and applying the techniques that I saw elsewhere, especially in Burgundy and in Oregon, helped me to know more about this grape and to vinify it better. So that helped me. And the worst thing, I don't know, we didn't do it at our winery, but maybe things that putting more too much product into a wine, kind of making more industrial. And that's what I didn't like into, for example, Australian wines. I didn't quite like the fact that you didn't respect the first product, like the grape.
Yeah,
we didn't even try the grape, or tasted it. We automatically put lots of sugar and acidity and all that. And I came home saying that I would never do that to my wines.
Good. So. Good. Yeah, I feel pretty strongly the same, that if you can't grow the grapes properly, you're never going to get something worth drinking
exactly.
Anyway.
Respect which, you know, of that's, the product.
It's the same as cooking. If you make a lousy soup, you can add a lot of hot sauce to it, but it's still lousy soup with hot sauce.
Yep, that's it.
How about a couple of the basics about the Bain Sipmac? What wines do you all make and send to the U.S.?
To the U.S., we send, we have the 7 grape varieties in Alsace, and one is red, so the Pinot Noir. That's the only red wine we have. So we have dry wines, sweet wines, dessert wines, crémant, like a champagne wine. We send in the U.S. Mostly Pinot Blanc, Riesling, and Pinot Gris.
Alsace is funny because people are a little afraid in the U.S. of the tall bottles, thinking that all the wines are going to be sweet because they look like German wine bottles.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's comforting is that most of the wines are varietally labeled, and we have a comfort level with that.
Exactly.
Knowing where the grapes are.
Yep. So, unfortunately, there's kind of a difference between winemakers. Different houses have different sweetness and different ways of vinifying different grapes. So it's kind of hard to situate the consumer in that. It's but often we try to write it down if it's dry or sweet. Often a Riesling is dry, Pinot Gris is more and more dry, and Pinot Blanc is dry. Sylvaner, it's also dry. So
if consumers would try two wines from your house, what wine could they drink every day, and what wine would be the important wine for them to have in the cellar?
I would go with a Riesling. Riesling would be very nice to have in the cellar because it's often very nice on the fish or as an aperitif, and you can follow with the starter or in your meal. And the second wine would probably be a Pinot Gris. Pinot Gris is a wine that you never make a mistake serving it. it's not too dry, not too sweet. And whenever you don't know if your friends like dry or sweet wines, you can serve a Pinot Gris, and it's often just passes like water. It's an easy wine.
Often over the years, I've told guests that Pinot Gris is what you wish California Chardonnay was actually like.
Yeah, it's fruity and it's a nice wine.
But richer texture than Riesling.
Exactly, it's a little more structured. Yeah, more bold wine. A little more bold, I guess.
So why should people travel to visit Alsace and to visit Domaine Sipmach?
Because it's a beautiful region. It's very pretty and lots of things to see. Sipmach, there's a lot of wineries, but if you stop by Sipmach, you'll probably not be unhappy, I guess.
That's a classic modest way in Alsace of if something is not perfect, you say it's imperfect. It might be 99.5%, but it's imperfect,
exactly.
And so you will not be unhappy. It's a very pleasant stop to come to Domaine Sipmach.
It's very Alsatian to be modest, but it's everybody finds something that they like in the Alsace wines. Really, if you like very sweet wine, there's a wine for you. If you like really dry, there's a wine for you. Bubbly wine, there's Crémant. So
what food do you like that is not food from Alsace for wine from Alsace?
Not food from
like if you're in the U.S. and you went and bought a bottle of Pinot Gris or Riesling,
mm-hmm. What would I pair with it?
Or Pinot Blanc, yeah. Food wise, you spent time in the U.S. Food wise, what sort of food would you have with that?
Good question. maybe I don't know.
I'll ask you. I'll ask you a much easier question. Food from Alsace, people should expect to have Alsatian wines with what kinds of dishes?
I guess salads. We have quiche and tourte and things, but you don't have that in the U.S. But I guess you have lots of salads and lots of like meat, white meat. You can put a Pinot Gris on it, like chicken meat. It's very good on Pinot Gris. Or you have Tex-Mex, like lots of Mexican kind of food where I go. And we had Pinot Blanc and Riesling on Tex-Mex. It was good.
It's funny. I always think of Alsace wines. My wife grew up in Hawaii, and so much of what she wants or eats is Pacific Rim food. And so many different Asian cuisines do well with wines from Alsace.
Yep.
Because
with the Gewürztraminer.
Yeah, Gewürztraminer for the spicier ones sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Riesling, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, even Sylvaner for the Sylvaner and sushi can be very, very good.
Yep. And Pinot Gris I tested a week ago. Sylvaner tested Pinot Gris with sushi and it was really good. So.
Yeah, I would think especially some of the spicier, richer fish.
Often we say that with fried or grilled fish, you can put Riesling. And with a fish that has sauce, you could put a Riesling or a Pinot Gris on it. It's kind of it's often very it's an experience. You have to try, and then you're very surprised that the pairing is very nice, is very good.
So if I can, I would like to go back to our original topic for a moment.
Yep.
of being a woman. Is there a woman who, from 40 years ago or 50 years ago, who that you think as maybe one or two that are important figures in French winemaking that made it easier for the women that came afterwards?
Well, there was big women like in Alsace. Colette Faller was a big woman that actually died a few week ago.
Yeah, God rest her soul.
But she made a lot for the woman in winemaking. She had a big character, and she proved that we could have our place in the meetings and the winemaking. So she had a big, important place in the winemaking in Alsace.
Well, and they've been important in bringing Alsace wines to the U.S., Domaine Weinbach.
Yeah, they were everywhere. Like Trimbach was, they were big names that had lots of wines and lots of notoriety and good wines. So it was they have a good image of the Alsace wines. So
well, be interested to see what after 10 generations what path you cut for yourself.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure. I'm sure there there are no women after you who are paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the program, Caroline.
Yep. You're welcome.
And I hope to see you soon in Alsace.
Yep.
Or here in Baltimore.
Maybe. It'll be good. Very quickly Baltimore.
Thank you very much. And that's all we have time for today on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. I'm Tony Foreman.